You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Since the revelations broke about Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein, more and more sexual harassment allegations have come to light against actor Kevin Spacey, journalist Mark Halperin, NPR editor Michael Oreskes, and more. And in the name of disclosure, I myself have experienced harassment in my career. And people have looked at the cost of sexual harassment to businesses, settlements, lost work time, loss of business. But for the people who experience sexual harassment, well, there's not as much economic research. Heather McLaughlin is one of the few people who has done this work. She's an assistant professor of sociology at Oklahoma State University, and she studied the economic and career effects of sexual harassment on working women and interviewed them. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yours is one of the few studies that attempts to measure the cost of sexual harassment. Why did you decide to do this?
Yeah, well, we're really interested in trying to look at some of the more tangible effects of sexual harassment. There's a lot of research that shows that sexual harassment can have long-term mental health effects for working women and men who experience sexual harassment, but it was more difficult to really look at those tangible economic career effects. And so that's a question that we really wanted to tackle.
Well, what did you find was sort of the most immediate cost for women who had been harassed?
Yeah, so most immediately, we found that a really large percentage of women quit their jobs. And so that's not all that surprising, unfortunately. At the time of our research, we were looking at women who were in their late 20s. A little over half of women started a new job in this 2-year window that we were looking at. But for those who experienced more severe sexual harassment, it was 80%.
Wow.
And so women were quitting their jobs either because of the sexual harassment itself or also because of the way that, you know, the sexual harassment was handled. But they were quitting their jobs and they were also reporting more immediate financial stress.
You also looked long term and you found that women who experienced harassment actually saw their wages stagnate. What was going on there?
Yeah, we found that a lot of women who quit their jobs were starting over in new careers entirely. So some of them were able to find comparable jobs in the same field. But many of them, this really affected the types of jobs that they were looking for. And so they wanted to work in a field where, you know, for example, they thought that sexual harassment was less likely to occur. So Pam is a really great example of this. Pam was working as an accountant for a bank, and she had been there for about 4 years. And one day, one of her coworkers came up to her and said, you know, hey, Pam, did you ever wonder why Bill uses this photocopier over here instead of the one that's closest to his desk? And Pam said, no, you know, why? What's that? And her coworker said, you know, oh, you're kidding me, right? And so he went on to name all of these things that had been happening that Pam had no idea, right? So Bill would stare and leer at her. He would engage in lewd gestures. He drew pictures of Pam on his computer and showed people. So Pam was outraged, right? She was understandably really upset that this happened, and she talked to her employer. So the employer reprimanded Bill, right, and said, hey, you can't do this stuff. But she was really upset that more wasn't done here. And she also felt really betrayed by her coworkers, because when this was investigated, they all kind of corroborated the story and said, yeah, this has been happening. But no one ever told her, you know, before this. No one ever confronted Bill directly, and these are all pseudonyms. So she just said that she just really had a hard time trusting people after that. And so she ended up cutting her hours back at the bank. And eventually she started working with a computer hardware company. And she told us, you know, this isn't something that I'm interested in. You know, I don't care about computer hardware. I took this job because I feel like I had to. You know, she said, I went to a position where I'm pretty much solitary. I work by myself, which is the way that I want it. Right. So you can really see how that can affect some women's career trajectories and the types of jobs that they're interested in after something like this happens.
Well, a lot of what you're talking about here is work environment, you know, hostile work environment, but then also how a supervisor or colleagues respond. And I guess I'm curious, when you spoke with women who had experienced harassment, what did they say about whether they had sort of supportive responses from the people around them or not?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a really great question, because in Pam's case, she said her coworkers did support her, right? They seemed just as outraged too, and they really, you know, turned their backs on this person. But no one did that until she's the one that started this complaint, right? And so I think that workplace culture is a really important part of this story with sexual harassment. Lisa, for example, she worked at an ad agency, and she described this environment as really misogynistic. Men would often drink and go to strip clubs. And so when she exposed this hostile work environment, she said that after that, she was watched really closely by people. She saw her responsibilities slowly being taken away. Her relationships deteriorated. And she said, you know, this is a quote from her interview. She says, "I would never become friends with these people. My boss would never be a mentor. I would never have any relationships with these people. So that was rough. And finally, I just quit. That's it. I'm out of here. I'll eat rice and live in the dark if I have to." Right. And so I think that this really reveals that a lot of working women are saying, you know, I'd much rather just quit and escape this environment than stick around and try to change it. And many times they didn't feel like they had the power to really do that, especially in cases like this, where even when they tried, people turned their backs on them.
I have to ask, someone could listen to this interview and say, well, yeah, but quitting is voluntary. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that this is a less than voluntary decision. People are forced out of these jobs. When you have the decision of whether or not, you know, to go into work today and experience these types of behaviors again, right? So do I really want to get up again this morning and go in and experience unwanted touching or staring or leering, or again, comments about my body and what I'm wearing and how that can, you know, affect the decisions you're making in the morning? And so yes, it's voluntary in the sense that they make that decision not to show up. But the long-term consequences this has. Like, it's not easy. It's not easy for people to make those decisions to put your own economic standing at risk in order to get out of these types of harassing scenarios.
You really zeroed in on these sort of early career or early mid-career women. And what seems to me is at play there is this question of power dynamic, right? It's hard to know at 26 that you're ever going to be 42 and the boss. Do you have a sense of whether the harassment these women reported inhibited their ability to get to more senior positions?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of these women who were working in, you know, high-paying jobs did leave those and pursue work in fields that they expected sexual harassment to be less likely to occur. And for some of them, that meant jobs that were more dominated by women. So there were fewer men there. And so they thought that they would be less at risk. But we also know that a lot of those types of jobs also come with less pay.
Right.
So they might be able to, I'm not sure if they would be able to move up as quickly or not in those fields. There's also research suggesting that men experience a glass escalator, right, where they move up more quickly to positions of authority, even in women-dominated fields. So I don't know about management authority, but certainly they're being shuffled into fields that are associated with lower pay because of the harassment.
Can you put a dollar figure on what these women lost by being harassed?
You know, I can't. I think it depends on these different cases. And I think the reality is that a lot of women are experiencing sexual harassment that isn't being captured in our research, right? So we certainly found this relationship where for those that we know experienced harassments, their earnings stagnated. But that might even be underestimating the extent to which sexual harassment impacts women's careers, because I imagine that some of the women in that other group also experienced it as well.
And before I let you go, why do you think there is so little research on this? I mean, I raise a skeptical eyebrow and I guess I say, gee, 85% of economists are male. Why isn't anyone studying this more?
Yeah, I think that sexual harassment is difficult to study. We can ask people if they've experienced any of these behaviors, but we can also ask people whether they would apply the term sexual harassment to what they're going through. And we see pretty big discrepancies there. But also, I think we especially need research from the perspective of harassers, which is even more difficult, right? Why do individuals in these positions of power abuse that using this particular mechanism of sexual harassment? I think that needs to be further explored and analyzed.
Heather McLaughlin from Oklahoma State, thank you so much.
Thank you.